Welcome back, everyone. Hopefully you got your fill, your stomach's a little more full, and you're ready to tackle some more porting. I know that was a good break for us. We got to relax a little bit, and he was cramming in some extra demo stuff. Hopefully we'll get to show off that, but yeah, it was good. So before we jump right back in, we had some really good questions from the Q&A, so I thought we'd take a couple of seconds to answer some of those.
Yep.
The first one's actually a pretty easy one. Do you need Unity Pro to use Unity VS? The answer is no. I actually misspoke. Sorry about that earlier. I meant to say that Visual Studio Pro is what you need in order to use Unity VS. You can use either the free version or the Pro version for Unity as well. Another good one is there's a question here about having more access to the Windows hardware, for example, haptic feedback. In Unity, apparently, it only has one setting, and it's super strong and long vibrate. Can we access the core? So the answer is yes.
Yeah, so it is on. This is on, right?
Yeah.
Yep. That's what we're going to cover, actually, in this section, where we're going to talk about native integration and how you can bridge down onto the native platform. So if you really wanted to, calling specific platform APIs, you can do that.
Okay.
So we'll talk a little bit about those.
Go a little bit more in depth on it.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, this one's a little difficult. I don't know if I necessarily have the answer for this one, but there's a gentleman here, I believe, that's using a high-performance simulations. They're using native GPU and CPU support for signal and image processing. And they've done a bunch of work to port some already needed functions, like Atlas, BLAS, FFTW. Are those going to be supported in Unity 4.5?
So I don't know 100%. My gut tells me no. I'm 99% sure no. Actually, yeah, I would have heard of them if there were new features that went into.
That's what I was going to say too. I haven't heard anything about it, so chances are probably not. But if you email either myself or Jaime directly, we can do a little digging and see if we can't find out for sure for you.
Yep.
And the last one before we move on, I got one here. Says, I'm using Unity Video Ads, to monetize my game. It's working better than the static ads. But right now, Unity does not support video ads for Windows Phone. So they're asking, how can they create a video ad unit inside of Microsoft Pub Center and integrate it into Unity?
Yep. So I guess the two parts to the answer. The first one is, Pub Center today does not broadly supports the video format. I'm not going to tell you they don't support it because you can go see like Xbox Lives and what we call tier one customers for Pub Center who have been running video, and they're actually, I wouldn't say like, it's kind of like we're in the beta process, but the beta is kind of closed where we selected a few partners to do it. So right now Pub Center does not have broad video format. That said, there's two answers to, or there's another two parts to that answer is, the first one is Pub Center. You would have to be a top publisher, talk to Pub Center and see if they let you in now. Otherwise, I think it's on the roadmap. They've already publicly announced that it's on the roadmap to be broadly available this fall. That's one part. The second one is you don't have to use Pub Center. If you look at, for example, MediaBricks, they're one of the partners that supports our platform, and they do have video format. And some of what we're going to talk about in this section, we'll talk a little bit of how do we integrate, because obviously MediaBricks would have to have a Unity plugin, which I don't think they have for Windows or Windows Phone. So you would have to do a little bit of the integration to do it yourself if you brought in their SDK.
Okay.
And that's one that we're going to cover a little bit on that section. Good way to, or a good time to kind of plug in services.windowsstore.com. If you're looking for services like, what are the options in advertisement? Like, you don't have to use Pub Center. You can use MediaBricks, InMovie, AdMob, all kinds of different ones. So services.windowsstore.com is where we post a lot of our partners, and it's a good way to go find who has what.
Very cool.
So
the answer basically is not right yet. You're not going to have access to that directly through PubCenter. But go look at some of the other third parties that are supporting our platform, and you'll probably have a path there.
Yep. Yeah, MediaBricks, definitely, that's their business, right? They do video ads. Yeah. It's kind of a hero moment video ad, but they do have it. And then there might be others that I don't know because I don't check that list as often as I said good.
Yeah, it's really good. It's good advice to check that list too. That's a really good source. Okay, so let's move on. Let's start talking a little bit about native integration.
Yep.
And hopefully the demo is ready to go now.
I was setting up. This is extra parts to the demo. So again, we're still dealing with this whole, we shifted machines, and I was just trying to see if this, this isn't for. All right, we're good. It was just whether I could project my phone directly onto using USB projection.
Yeah, you don't really want to be holding up the phone. You'd like to be able to actually see it on the screen there.
Yep, so we're good. Let's talk about integration, and we'll show you the Windows demo as we originally planned anyway. So this is not, this was just stuff we're adding.
Do you want to start off with the demo then?
Yep, so we're starting with Windows integration. So if you've seen actually the Windows UI, if you see it right here, here's what we call our start screen. And this is a fairly typical, again, this machine is pretty clean, so it doesn't have a huge number of apps, but this is a fairly typical splash screen. And one of the most iconic features that I think Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 have is the whole concept of a tile, right? And if you've been to any Microsoft event, you've heard people talk about live tiles and push notifications and all kinds of things where, for example, right here, again, this machine is, you know, is fairly clean, but you see right here, my email is coming back with, emails that are arriving. You see here the people application is actually flipping their tile, telling me whose birthdays are today. How many of my friends have birthdays today. You see my calendar. You see the weather. It's 85 in Washington, D.C. We're in Redmond, Washington, so, it doesn't help us that much. But you see this whole concept of live tiles. And this is a really great way to bring customers back onto your application, right? For example, if you play a game and you reach level 3 or something, or if a person hasn't come back to play your game for 3 days, you can give them a notification. You can give them a live tile that says, hey, come back, level 3 is waiting. Or if you have a sale or something like that, it's a really great way. You see it right here through our store application where they're flipping around telling you, hey, here's a star pick. Here's some things that you should be aware of. Very inviting, very effective way. We've actually run A/B testing and ran some, tryouts. We tried a few features and we found out, hey, this really works. So that's one of the things that you can see that it's one of those features that everybody should implement.
Live tiles are great, right? Because like you just said, they really, they engage the user without them actually having to open up your game, right? So, yep. I like the points you were saying about the high scores and stuff, right? So, Johnny beats my high score. I get a notification on a live tile, tells me I'm more likely to jump back in the game and play it because I know it's giving me constant feedback and constant updates, right? And I totally agree. Live tiles is probably one of the number one things that you definitely want to support on the platform.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's other things for example, here, if you go back to my screen, for example, settings is another one that's very important, right? When you have any game running, you want to have some sort of setting there where you can go back and say, give them your privacy settings, give them permissions, give them things that they might need to implement, give them control over some of the features and stuff like that, options. So these are another ones where people should integrate with the platform because these are native APIs that you need to integrate with. In order for you to actually do, give them the option to do settings and everything else. Mm. Sharing is another one, right?
So what would be your advice, though, say if you had settings internally, so you had a menu setting that actually had settings, would you keep that in there and have the settings on the charm as well, or?
That's a good, he's trying to get me there. it's a good question. The way I put it is, initially the Microsoft guidance is, that everybody should use the settings. We used to call it the settings charm, which is this one thing right here. When I press Windows C, these things is the charms and it comes up and you can go into the settings charms here and kind of see whatever the options were for a specific game. you know, that was the initial guidance from Microsoft. They said, oh, people should do that. And that there was two kind of different arguments against that story. The main one that I ran into a lot was obviously I spent all my time porting games. So people were like, well, we already have the gameplay. We, you know, we need to make sure that we are consistent with our game elsewhere. If somebody is actually playing it elsewhere, you know, we need to make sure that that's a consistent experience. So so a lot of people kept kind of a one settings button that's in their app, mm-hmm. right? The other point that was interesting was that in some cases, like, for example, for me, being a Microsoft employee and trying to help external partners, the logical compromise was like, well, can you just have your button or can you just do both? And there, you know, sometimes we run into kind of, I wouldn't say a race condition, but sometimes you run into scenarios where, like, if the user can get into settings from anywhere, now your business logic becomes a little bit more complicated because you need to know when you can refresh a screen, when you can do certain things. Like, for example, there's places where in a game, there might be a place where if somebody changes a specific setting, you have to, like, reload the whole screen. And Windows has that where, because they have it on the setting charms, if you expose it there, you you know, you might have that extra logic that you have to write. The advice that I give people is, first of all, some people will look for it on the settings charms, so you should do your absolute best to have it on the settings charm. I don't tell people to remove the button. I think, you know, obviously it's a duplication in some cases, but if you have a game and you want to be consistent and you see people find it on the right place, it's okay to keep it there. Try to keep those two settings in sync is the best advice that I can give people. The last one that we go back and forth a lot around is whether if you have a settings button like a gear, the canonical gear, is whether your button should launch your in-menu settings or it should launch the settings pane. And that one, it just comes down to whatever works for your game. Mm-hmm. So I would say do the right thing, but I do want to make sure people know that there's people like me who instinctively now just press Windows C and try to go into settings. And sometimes, like, I'm playing a game and I'm not seeing the settings and I'm not seeing them where I expect them. So I would recommend try to do both.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice. And I like what you said there about the fact that you're used to looking for it there. So, you know, as users are getting more and more comfortable with Windows 8, they're expecting that sort of feel. And it's almost a must to have that included, right? But I like your point where you're not going to tell the person who's porting their game, who spent all that time, no, you got to undo that and put it into the settings, right? Just do whatever works best for you, really.
Yep, exactly. So that's it. And though it's, you know, you had a really great question. Somebody saying, oh, I want this really low level API that obviously Unity does not expose and I won't have access to. So what do I do there? In some cases, there might be new hardware APIs and certain things that, and this is what this module is about. So that gives you kind of context. I just gave you a little bit of tiles and settings and a few things that I would say, hey, these are the reasons where you have to integrate. And what we're going to spend, you know, our time in this module is going to be more spent going even under the hood. Yesterday, you know, at the MBA training from yesterday, the folks did, you know, did a really good job at walking you through, here's how you implement Splash, or here's how you implement Share, or something like that. I actually want to take it even down a level and say, oh, let's talk about how you write your own plugins. And let's talk about, first of all, we're going to go down and explain people how to do the underlying code, the under the hood code. And then we're going to raise it up a notch and say, okay, you don't have to go do all that. Now that you know how to do it, you can decide if you want to do it or not. But you definitely want to know about these vendors and these offers that we have.
Well, yeah, because if you're going to go out and purchase a plugin to do that low-level stuff, you kind of want to know what it's doing, right? So
exactly.
you know what to expect and if it's broken or not, right?
Yep, exactly. So you want to know how to troubleshoot it is the way I think about it.
Yeah.
So let's start from the top down, and then hopefully we'll get there quickly enough. So here's what I always talk to people about, the communication chains that we have to go through. If you think about what we have running, this is the same on Windows and Windows Phone. It kind of always looks like this. You have a host, which is kind of the executable, the thing that Windows or the OS is launching. And then we already talked about it. We always have a page in there, and then we have the swap chain, right? No matter what you do, it might be a window, a core window instead of a page, but you always have this swap chain that Unity is running against. And then your Unity game is kind of this Unity player DLL. And so you're kind of abstracted from, within Unity, you're kind of abstracted from directly accessing the system in some cases. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of where, you know, there's all these platform services like tiles and notifications and certain things that you're like, oh, how do I get there? And here's at the high level how things work. First of all, in some cases, Unity is already listening to some of the events, you know, the key press or the back button event.
Or screen resolution changes stuff. Yeah, well, it's not listening, but you can put that in there.
Exactly. So, well, Unity is listening because they're listening on your behalf. Yeah. Or when you connect and say, I want to listen, they go connect it on your behalf too. So there's that kind of level of integration. And that one's pretty straightforward. And then Unity can give you some callbacks where they're coming onto your game and you know, calling you back or letting you connect, hook into the process. And then if you want to do your own and talk to the platform services, you can use just Unity plugins to actually communicate plugin, you know, to the WinRT APIs or the lower level platform services. Mm-hmm. So we're going to cover this kind of like number two and number three, because number one is kind of a freebie that we don't have to look at. If you look at where, you know, how, like, what kind of listening or what kind of APIs Unity does for you, which is the kind of number one level. So the first thing on phone, they have a Unity app class, and here they have some methods that are very, very, very useful. And most of these methods are actually have to do with the lifecycle management for a Windows Phone app. If you think about Windows Phone, your app can go into the foreground and be the app that's on the front, and then the user will play, will press this Windows button, or maybe a call will come in, and they'll go switch into the phone application. And your app goes into the background, and you need to know how to manage all these things. So for example, like they give you an obscure event where when a call comes in, they automatically give you a method that you can call into that says, oh, you know, a call is coming in, my application is partially, you know, blocked, so I should pass my game. If the user picks up the call, then Unity automatically translates onto pause, mm-hmm. right? So Unity gives you all these higher level events that you can use and higher level APIs that you can use to communicate back and forth. The other one that you need to communicate back and forth is these begin invokes that they have, right? Where this is what you're using to communicate from the Unity thread onto our UI thread. You know, so if you're on, you know, SAML UI thread, or if you, for example, are in Unity and you out of the sudden want to show a message box for whatever reason, or if you want to show a web view or something like that, you want to communicate back and forth, Unity has their own UI thread, and then XAML or Windows has their own UI thread, and you need to make sure that not only do you have a way to call back, but you call onto the right thread.
Yeah. Well, a good example is that is the shares and the search and all the charms that we use. We use callbacks, the begin invokes and stuff like that, in order to be able to hook the two of them together.
Yep, exactly. So this is what these APIs do, and these are the higher level ones that you need to do. The one that they don't give you is, and at least, you know, and this is not necessary because it would be duplicate, is that if you want to call onto the XAML UI thread, we have a function that's in the platform that's called dispatcher.beginInvoke. So if you look at the from the slides, that's kind of what the one that you would call that Unity doesn't give you. But pretty much the APIs that you need are there for you to be able to call back and forth. On what I call WinRT in this slide, but it should be Windows and Universal, they have something equivalent, right? They give you invoke and kind of an invoke an app thread so that you can call onto the application thread. They give you an invoke and UI thread. And then Unity, Windows does not have the exact same event. So for example, they don't have the concept of obscure because in Windows, your application resizes, but you're either, you know, the foreground app or you're in the foreground or you're not. There's no like partially obscured event in there. And then they also give you some Unity, some useful methods like, you know, a check whether you're running on the UI thread. That way you don't have to dispatch back and forth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the callbacks that, you know, Unity does for you at the system level. Another thing that Unity does on Windows and Universal, which is really nice, is that for certain pieces of the native integration, they already provide you the functionality. So if you go to look at unityengine.wsa, they actually have all these classes, like, for example, tile. Right? Tiles are those icons, the launch icons that we have that we just showed that said, hey, these have to be live. And they give you some really rich functionality. Like, for example, a lot of the things we're going to talk about today on, like, oh, updating tiles, etc., it's already in there, and it's a Unity API, so you don't have to do any work. It's seamless. You don't have to write a plugin. You don't have to do any work.
And it calls it on the proper thread and everything. For,
yeah,
you don't have to worry about invoking it. And
yep, it does all the right threading and everything. Toast notifications, another one. If you want to do basic license information, it's another one. So UnityEngine.wsa has a lot of that functionality. It doesn't know absolutely everything. In some cases, it does things like, for example, license information. You can check with this trial, but you don't have full kind of store integration, which we're going to talk about later. And with that, we kind of, if those things that I just mentioned are not enough, and that means you want to go a lower level, you want to write your settings, you want to do something else, then the option is to write a plugin. And that's what we're going to show you how to do in this section. To recap, before we talk about writing a plugin or integration strategies, it's good to go back to the earlier things that we said. We talked about on Windows Phone, you have monocompiler and .NET for Windows Phone. On Windows 8, you have .NET compiler on both. So in some cases, if you look at the options, because of how you're running, you have a little bit more options than Windows 8 and Universal, where if I want to just call directly into the Tile APIs, and remember we talk about .NET and having full .NET support or having .NET partial core, and when I say, look, if you're in a Universal app, you can have, and you choose to do full .NET, like, you know, .NET core support and compile with that switch, then you can actually inline plugin for code. So you can literally from there just call the Tile API and not have to do anything. Now, on Windows Phone, because you're using the monocompiler, you don't have that option at all. So on Windows Phone, the only way to call onto plugin for code is to first write a plugin so that you can abstract, because the monocompiler cannot link against, you know, our Windows APIs, our WinRT or our .NET Core APIs. It just doesn't know how to get that in there. So for the most part, for phone, you'll always have to write plugins because you can inline. On Windows and Universal, you have the option, and you can use either one. But, you know, we're going to cover plugins so that people know
how to. But my question, and like, it's kind of, I actually don't even know the answer to this one. I'm actually going to ask you is, if I do the .NET Core and I don't have access to my JavaScript and I have another plugin that uses JavaScript, am I still going to be able to use that, or would I have to recompile it?
Yeah, so so kind of like if you go back to when we said, like, that's why I laugh because I said, oh, here's my PowerPoint or logic, where it was a complex sentence, and I literally, like, the way we worded it was we put an or in the middle and we put it in parentheses. So when you do .NET partial core, right? .NET partial core, what that does is it goes back and said, oh, the scripts on this folder specifically, like the plugins folder and the asset folders, those are going to be compiled with mono. All the other scripts are not going to be compiled with mono. So the other scripts can still access WinRT APIs, and then the scripts that are in that folder can be accessed from JavaScript, and then, you know, you create a little bit of spaghetti code, so I don't recommend you go there. What you see here is writing a plugin is not that hard. It's a good architecture pattern. So I'm going to walk you through it, and I'm going to give you probably the more pure, there's ways to write plugins that are simpler than the ones we're going to walk you through, but we're going to give you the pure, the most architecturally sound, like, hey, here's how I would do it. And there's a little bit of simplifications we can discuss, but to go back to your point, I think at that point, if you're mixing, I would just write a plugin and abstract it. Yeah. The advantage, you mentioned earlier too, is the advantage of writing a plugin is that you can at some point decide, oh, I'm going to swap this for something else, or, oh, this goes away because the platform now supports it. So it's a nice abstraction and encapsulation that you're already building if you just write the little.
It goes back to my point about dynamic code, right? If you're writing the code, you should be writing it dynamically where you can swap in and out things as you go.
Yep. So cool. So again, I'm using here, this is the one area on our demos today where because I have to walk you through the whole concept of plugins, I'm going to use two IDEs because I wanted to use the free ones. Normally, for me and my day job, I just have Visual Studio Pro, and I use one IDE for both. But this is one that I'll show you. Before we go there, let me recap really quickly the concept of a plugin and what we're going to try to do here. So the idea here is a plugin is a binary. It's literally a binary that I'm going to be calling from my C#. Now, in order for us to do that, remember we talked about the editor runs mono, and then the runtime is a different version. So we kind of end up having to, at some point we might need to swap a DLL because within the editor is not going to know anything about WinRT. Mm-hmm. And this is an architecture that Unity already has and supports. So this is not new. I'm just recapping in case somebody has just been purchasing plugins and not writing their own. And then I'm going to show you that, oh, here's how we write it for Windows. And this is going to feel natural from a pure, hey, you're just using Visual Studio to create all the right things. You're already coding Visual Studio. So we'll walk you through that a little bit. So I'm going to start here, and I'll code it from scratch. I have one written, but I'll just code it
from
scratch.
This is brave. So we can... Live coding.
We'll do the absolutely smallest one that we can do. So I'm going to launch, this is a good example. I'm going to launch Visual Studio Express 2013 for desktop. And the reason for it is because the free versions, Express is the one that we target desktop, and you'll target .NET DLLs. And then Windows, Visual Studio Express for Windows is the one that will target Windows Store. And remember, the first thing we have to do is create a plugin for the editor. This is what Mono is going to be loading within the editor. So I'm going to go in and create a desktop DLL. That's what we're going to do. So I'm just going to go right here and say File, New Project. And I'll do a class library. And let me just create a new folder. So let's just call it MBA. And I'm going to use MP for my plugin. And then here, let's just call it sample plugin. And I usually like to name it where I say this is .editor, because that will just tell me that this is the editor version of the DLL. Ironically, we're going to revert by the name in a minute, so you'll see how this works. So I'm just going to say sample plugin .editor, and I'll just go and click OK. I'm horrible at talking and coding in parallel. So here I have the editor, the plugin that I'm going to use in the editor. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to remove that .editor extension that I just added so that I had a project that I could identify easily.
And this way everything's in the same namespace.
Yep, exactly. So I can go back here under project settings, and I'm going to say, look, the assembly name is actually going to be sample plugin. We're going to end up with two assemblies that have the exact same name. Sorry.
Can you extend the font a little bit just so they can see it a little easier?
Oh, any more than that?
Not in this one. Actually, in the code, I think this is okay. This is pretty.
Yeah, the code I can zoom in. I'm already 1366x768. I feel like I'm handicapped already. So I'll walk through everything as we go. So here I'm just going to say default namespace to be sample plugin. This is optional stuff. And then I'll show you some of the tips. Again, these are the tips and tricks that I follow every time. So I just make sure that the assembly name is something that's going to be shared, and I did the namespace so that it'd be shared too. And then I'll go into build, and this is my editor. Now, Unity has all these preprocessors within their Unity code and their Unity script that they use, and one of them is Unity Editor. So I like to do it where this is my editor DLL, so I go ahead and define it. So I'm just going to say my conditional symbol right here is already going to be Unity Editor. Right, and this is just my personal way where I can go black and code, and you'll see in a minute why we like to do that, right? So I'm just going to go there, define it that way, and then actually let's go to hero class.
And the reason you built that was just to make sure that the change went through, so that when you tried to call it, it actually existed.
No, the reason I used the preprocessor.
No, why did you build it after you did that?
Oh no, I just I'm nervous. I get nervous when I'm coding on state, when I'm not very good at tagging and coding.
Yeah, no worries.
So I'm just like, okay. So let's just say let's just say we had this class one, and let's just say public static string platform, right? Actually, let's just make it a method to keep it simple for people who are coming from different platforms and all that. Just call it like that, right? So let's just call it, let me make it a method. And this is just going to return the platform that we're getting called from. Now remember, this is the editor. This is the code that's going to be run in the editor. So what I normally do for my plugins is I just go in there and said, if Unity Editor, right? And I'll just go like that. I'm just going to say return editor. Right.
So the preprocessor directive there is what you've written, the if and end if, and that's basically saying any of the code in between those two lines will only be ran if I'm inside the editor. If I'm in on the phone or if I'm in the store or if I'm working on any other platform, that code's not going to run.
Exactly. And you'll see in a minute why this is the, you'll see in a minute why, because this is probably more, in my mind, is more complicated and to understand at the beginning, but more sustainable in the long run. So you'll see in a minute why we do it this way. This is optional. You could, like, because this is my editor DLL, I could get rid of, like, I could not define Unity editor. I could make sure that I'm not doing anything. And as long as I kept my code separate, I would be okay.
Yeah.
You'll see in a minute why I do it this way. So that's it. I'm just, you know, Unity editor, and I'm just going to keep it like that and be okay. I'm just going to leave it with Clouds 1, and I'm just going to build. Again, mostly because I don't like to move on to the next one. Now, this is the plugin that's going to go in the editor. Two things that we got to remember. We call it sample plugin. We're going to need this for our next one because we're going to write one for Windows. And it'll be the exact same process to run it for Windows or to Windows Phone. So I'll show you. So here I'm going to go into Visual Studio project. And I'm just going to go into that same folder. If I remember where I put it.
And this time around, you're using Visual Studio Express for Windows, not Windows Desktop.
Exactly. Right. And again, if you had Visual Studio Pro, you would be able to do it all in one solution.
Yeah.
But here, we're just going to go about it.
Showing them the free way of doing it all.
Yep, the free way. And for the record, I found that out last night at like 11 when I swapped machines. I was like, oh, I'm going to run into these, and I'll just go there. So CMBA, all right, so we have, I'm just gonna go in and put it on the same folder that we did there, and I'm just gonna call this one sample plugin. And this is all optional, you don't have to follow my naming convention. I'm just giving you the, hey, here's how we do it, and then I'll walk you through why we do it the way we do
it. I like it that way though, at least it's organized, because if you don't have that naming convention, you're gonna start writing code in different parts of the plugin, and you won't realize that you're doing
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So here I select Windows Apps, because these are Windows 1, I could do Universal, it'll be the exact same, because it's the same class library, right? And then I'm just gonna say, okay. And then I'll do the exact same thing that I did earlier, where it's gonna create a DLL. Now, a couple things that we're gonna, here's where things will start making sense, and you'll be like, either you'll say, this is pretty cool, or you're gonna be like, hey, you overkilled it. I'm okay either way. I like my way. So I'm gonna go here, project settings, like we did earlier, and we're gonna say, oh, we want this to be called sample plugin is our assembly name. They have to have the same assembly as the same assembly name. This is a Windows requirement, Unity requirement, and our namespace is gonna be sample plugin like we did earlier, right? So we're good there. And now here's the interesting part. The whole principle here is that we're going to swap the plugins. So we got to do two things. The first one is that we got to tell Unity, the editor, here's all the methods we want to call. You have to have all the right signatures. The second one is we're going to swap the implementations, right? That's the whole trick around everything.
So we're basically making a stubbed class
exactly.
to put inside the editor. So the editor knows when we say my sample plugin dot whatever.
Exactly.
It'll know where to look.
Exactly.
Otherwise you'll throw a bunch of errors, right?
Yep, exactly. So what I'm gonna do here is I'm gonna go back and do the Unity underscore Metro because this is the preprocessors that they use for Windows. It'll be Unity underscore WPF, WP8 if it was for Windows Phone. Or I can do Unity underscore WinRT. These are preprocessors in Unity, and I'm just defining them because I want to keep my code consistent such that I could, later on, I could swap my JavaScript, my C# script from here and put it inside Unity if I really wanted to.
Yeah.
Right, that's why I'm keeping things a little bit on
You're building a really solid foundation.
Yeah, that's, I'm an over-engineer. and so that's what we have. So now you see what I'm doing here. I'm setting up my own total different plugin. It's got the right preprocessors. And here's where you're gonna see why we did it the way we did it. Now I'm gonna go here. Now I'm gonna blow away that class one that I have here. Now here, earlier I did the if Unity editor, return editor. I could have kept that code 100% separate from this one, but then I would have had to make sure that my signatures are matching.
Well, you'd have to work on both every time
exactly.
you change something.
So what I'm gonna do is slightly different. I'm gonna go right here and I'm gonna say add existing item. And now I'm gonna go there, find the class one CS I had and add it as a link. So now I'm sharing that same file, right? And this is why I added the preprocessor. Because remember here, Unity Editor is not gonna be defined on this project, but it's defined on the other. Mm-hmm. So now I can go back here and say, for example, right now, if I just add that and I try to compile it, this should fail. And it's going to come back and says, hey, you're not returning anything. What's up? Right? And so what I do here is I'm just going to say, else if Unity Metro, and I'm just going to say return Windows. And obviously, if this was phone, I would do return, you know. And obviously, I'm doing the very basic return.
Yeah.
But here is where I would be doing like, oh, let me go in there, do tiles or do settings or do whatever I need to do. So this is my lower level integration that we would have to do. So now I'm there and I'm compiled. And you see now, if you look at it, I have two plugins called sample plugin. And I got to go back and put them into a Unity project and then do the magic, right? So I'm going to go here to Unity. And I'm just going to, now obviously, if I wanted to do phone, I would do a third one. I'm not going to repeat the work. Rinse and
it'd
repeat
be the exact same thing, only you're just using a different preprocessor directive. Yep.
We did that rinse and repeat on our hair too much, and we lost it, so we're not doing it today. Right? So I'm going to go here and say new project. Just create something totally empty. And I was CMBAMP, so we call it. Not. You don't have to do all in the same folder and all that. Some people don't like the word harness. That's the word I use for test for everything I do. So so there you go. It's there. It's an empty project, you know, just created. And here's a typical Unity project. And what we do here, let me just change my layout. Either one is fine, but I'm thinking these might be a little
easier to see a little bit,
A little easier for people to see. So I'm going to go here into the assets folder, and then in assets you have to create a folder called plugins. This is a Unity requirement. Like they have a, they follow a very specific project structure or folder hierarchy. And then because we were doing one for Unity for Windows 8, I'm just going to go back and create a folder called WP8 or W. Actually, we're going to call it Metro because this is Windows 8. Unity got ahead of us when we renamed the Windows 8 Metro app. thinking they were too far along. So now I have this project, these two folders right here, and what I can do here is go back to Explorer, right, and come back to the projects that I created.
Did you build both those projects?
Yeah. Okay. So I built them too many times, I think. I hope, let's see. So sample plugin.editor bin debug, and see I got my sample plugin DLL, and that one goes into the plugins folder, so at the root level here.
Because that's our stub.
Because that's our stub one that's going to be used within the editor, right? And then I can go back onto my other one, sample plugin.windows, right? And that one I'm going to put inside the Metro folder. Make sense?
Makes sense.
And now, for example, here, I guess now I just need a really quick, I'm just going to add.
Put a quick script in there?
Yep. I can't create a script without putting a scripts folder. I'm allergic to. Sorry.
All your code is really easy to read, though.
I don't think it is, but anyway, let's just call it color. Whatever. And here, all I can do there is I'm just going to open this up. And in this case, it's going to be using MonoDevelop because, again, this is vanilla, what everybody gets with free downloads and all that. And then here, I'm just going to do, I just do here, just debug.log sample plugin dot class one, dot get platform, right? So as vanilla, as easy as we could ever get, that's going to be it. And I'll build it here again, mostly because of demo paranoia. and then I'll come back here and export it. Actually, like you could see it right here. If we're going to the main camera now and we just add that component, right? And we add it there. And I just run these main scenes. This is the one area where Unity people make fun of me. I'm old enough to call it main. you know, that's how old I am here. So here I have a default scene. I have, I attached the script to the camera. So technically, Fingers crossed, I run it and it says editor. Right? So now I know that, hey, that's code that's running inside the editor and all that. If I go back here real quick and then just say export.
I was gonna say, let's build it out for the phone or for Windows and see if it
Yep. So he doesn't trust me. Okay. I get it. I get it. My money, you gotta get your money's worth. I'm just gonna make it the simple one. Yeah. Yeah, let's enable that just in case, but I don't think we need it. And so I'm gonna create an out. This is another one where like I have to have out and it has to say platform specific. we need one. And this is actually a good tip. Like something that you might be seeing is that I keep coding for Win8.1 and I keep saying it's Win8. If you download the Visual Studio 2013 Express, that targets Win8.1. If you need to target Win8, you need the Visual Studio 2012 Express.
Okay.
Both of them work fine side by side. It's just gonna take an extra, probably 1 gigabyte of space extra. That's just something that people who are watching might wanna know about.
But again, if you have Visual Studio Pro or Premium,
yeah, if you have
that,
another
that's
one,
already included.
It's all there. It's all there. So I'm going to go here and launch that harness we just created. Now, so what happened there, if you want to know what happened, is obviously we gave Unity these two plugin folders, right? So Unity, when it built, it automatically knows, oh, I'm going to use this one to do static references and kind of resolve symbols. But then it copies the other sample plugin, the Windows 8 one, the Metro one right here, onto the output folder, and that's the one that we're linking against.
Oh, very cool.
So it does the magic for you.
So it has to. So just to clarify, that folder has to be called Metro.
Yep.
And if I do a Windows Phone version, it's WP8.
It's WP8. Yeah, and there'll be a slide that has here's the folders and everything else. So we're good there. And let me go back here, and it was harness. And Windows 8.1, so we're good there, just build. And I debug log. One of the nice things about Visual Studio is debug log from within Unity gets automatically brought up as into our output window for Visual Studio.
Very handy.
So you're just gonna see a whole lot of things, but one of them should be the one that we're looking for. So I'm just gonna say x86. And assuming everything worked, if it didn't work, we should have gotten a compilation error. So I run there.
It'll just be a blue screen right now.
Yep. Control-Alt-O. So somewhere along the way, in between all this stuff, there should be a Windows. Oh, there's too many.
I was going to say, that's going to be quite the search term there.
All right. All right, this is going to be, I screwed that one up. But obviously, it would have not compiled if we had a problem. So I think it's just something we got to find there. Somewhere in there, it's got to be there. All right, I'm not going to find it if I continue looking this way. I should have chosen a better name.
I was going to say, like, I put a lot of default words in there. Like, if I'm looking for something to fire, I'll put the word moo.
Yep.
Something like that. Just so it's easy to find right when you're searching for it.
Yep. But that's so that's how it is. Like, that's how we do it, where we go back and we add it. And it's, you know, it's like now that's going to be calling onto our plugin. And if I wanted to do one for Windows Phone, I would have done the exact same thing where I would just created an extra DLL and I would have done WP8.
Very cool.
I come back and find it in a little bit. I just don't want to waste 5 minutes going in there to find it just because I chose the wrong.
Like, where's Waldo with our debug code?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, it's like finding a hidden object, man. I was actually going back and make sure that I told it to do Windows. But I'm pretty sure that was a string I used. So I used the wrong string in making it up on the fly. But that's how you go back and that's how you'll be there.
Yeah.
So that's how the plugins work.
I'd say that's a good intro to how a plugin's set up, right? I like your method. I've used different ways of doing it in the past, but this way seems to be keeping it very strict, very solid. So you've got a good foundation to build off of. I like that.
Yeah. So, for me, you know, like linked files makes it a lot easier for me to get the signatures right. Cause I tend to get off sync. I started the other way and I tend to get off sync a lot. You know, having the same namespace is the right thing. So you see right here every possible option. Like, It's one solution with three projects, same assembly name, same namespaces. These are requirements in order for all of these to link. You can use different preprocessor directories. Again, that's optional. If you want to do it with shared code base via link files, that's great. That's why you need the different preprocessors. And then obviously you just put them into the right folders within Unity and you're there. Here's the preprocessor we just talked about. So Unity Editor is what they use in the editor. You need WP8 for Windows Phone 8. You need Metro and Metro 8.1 for the, you know, if you use Metro, that will apply to 8.1. If you use 8.1, that's only 8.1. Unity WP8 8.1 is actually the one that we use if you're coding for universal apps in targeting the Windows Phone 8.1.
Okay.
So there's no, like, Unity by itself does not target Windows Phone 8.1. I'm going to talk about that in a minute because I'll show you the workarounds there. And then the last one, Unity WinRT is the equivalent of Unity WPA or Winner.
So if I was running for multiple platforms, say I was running for Android, and I had some code in there that I only wanted to run on Windows platforms, I could use the Windows_WinRT, and that would actually say Windows Phone and any other Windows device.
Yeah, if you want to say, hey, exclude Windows, you say, if not, Unity WinRT, and that includes all the Windows Mobile, which is phone and tablet.
Very cool.
Yep. So that's kind of what you do. Again, when you create the plugins manually like I did, you define the preprocessors. I use the same naming convention as they did because it makes it convenient for me. Again, the principle there is I can then copy that file onto Unity later. Like that same file we created, I could very quickly just move it into inline and it would have been the exact same thing if I was
compiling. It's kind of like the theme of the day, dynamic code.
Yep. So... so that's it. With regards to the folders, here's the folders that we looked at. So there's assets, plugins. You got WPA, you got Windows Phone 8.1, if you're doing universal Windows Phone, Metro or Metro/Win8.0, and Metro/Win8.0 if you're doing Win8.1, if you're doing Win8.1. So here's all the folders, the folder structure that you have to follow. Now, that's for hardcore people who need to do something extra. The reality is, like, most people watching this should just go buy a plugin. It's so much easier. It's
going to save you a lot of time.
Exactly. Like, if most plugins are somewhere between, $20 and, $99 for the more expensive ones, like, and you just saw me spend 2 hours and I spent 20 minutes and I, like, barely wrote two lines of code. In some cases, it's worth the value. And the one thing that we have is Microsoft has partnered with Prime31, which is one of the leading plugin vendors, to provide you the plugins that we think are essential for your application. So they have something called Essentials, which has tile support, notifications. I'm going to show it to you in a minute. And then they have support for the store. They have support for ads with PubCenter. And then they have Azure support. So pretty much like the ones that we thought, this is really critical, we partnered with Prime31 and they're gonna be free for the whole year.
Nice.
That started in like June, May 15. I can't remember if we went live May 15 or June 1st, but we have about 9 more months of where they're free. So if you looked at it, this is like $400+. If you get every possible plugin for all platforms, that's $400 that you no longer have to pay.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I've actually used these in a few of my games, and they're really intuitive. They're really easy to use. The documentation's really tight around them. It's really good.
Yeah, so they ship with good samples, and they do the right thing. They were some of the most popular. So, and Mike's the guy that does is very responsive. So, and with that, let me show you their one of their demos real quick. This one I'm just going to show
you. Well, he's pulling up the demo. I'm going to mention, we talked a little bit earlier about the Sumo Blocks code that I had, and we'll get that up in chat and make sure that you have access to it. But in there, I actually have a plugin that I built for ad revenue. So if you wanted to have an ad system inside of your game. So it's pretty cool because basically what I did was I did it the same way that Jaime did it. I broke it down that way. And you can kind of rip apart the code and see how a plugin's put together. And it's fully functional and easy to look through. So if you're interested in seeing a little bit more of deeper code base, check that out.
Yep. So here I'm going to open both solutions so you don't see me type anything. I created them essential out, we need one. And I'll just show you both. Like, there's nothing interesting to see, actually, on the C# solution. On the Unity side, it's pretty simple, right? You just go into Assets, Import Package, Custom Package, and then navigate onto the package that you get from
that. I'd say 95% of the people that have used Unity have done this before.
Yeah, everybody here has done it. If you look at the code, actually, this is an interesting thing. Shows you how powerful some of the platform is. If you look at the code, in some cases, most of the items that we're going to look, for example, updating a tile batch is one line of code. Tile update batch, attention, right? Or in some cases, like show and share UI, which I'm going to show you in a minute. Here's like three lines of code where he's actually showing some share UI, and he's putting the string. He says, this is cool stuff, and you know, you'll see in a minute what share can look like, right? So there's a lot showing sentiment pains, one line. So there's a lot of kind of like productivity here that you're going to get with your integration. Most of them are a few lines of code, and you're getting a lot of functionality.
Yeah, coming from a guy who's built a lot of plugins lately, that's very, very handy. And it's nice. You don't have to dig through all that code just to get something up and running.
Yep, really, and this is their sample that comes out of the box. So I didn't touch any code, and you'll see it right here. So for example, their sample right here is going to have a bunch of buttons just to demonstrate tiles and notifications and a few things. So for example, right here you have, let's see, show share UI, right? This is the one where it's already ready to share. So for example, here, if I want to send it to OneNote or Twitter or Facebook, it would already be ready to share. For example, here, I'm not going to click on any of these because it'll show up on my email and stuff like that, but you'll see it. It's passing that string onto...
And you define the string there. Can you click on it just again for a second?
Yep.
So you see there at the top, it says, share this cool stuff, and then this is a link to the Prime31 site. You actually set that when you call the share.
Yep, exactly. So that was the options where I show you the three lines of code for share, because that was one. If, for example, I want to show a toast, I just click on it. That one should have worked. Maybe it doesn't work because I'm remote.
It might be because you're remote.
All right, let's see. I tested all of these yesterday, though.
Hit the scheduled toast for 30 seconds, and then...
See which one. Yeah. I'm clicking all of them now. I'm
one of them will pop up.
So I'm going to update the live tile so you can see it. Somehow the notifications one are not. I tested them locally before we remote desktoped. Here's the live tile ones. So you can see their title gets updated. This is the P31 Metro Essential. So somehow our notifications are not carried through.
Can you show them another update? Just update a tile with something else just so they can see?
Well, it's always the same ones, though. So let's see if we can update batch. Let's see what the tile looks like now. So right there. And update batch. And see right there, the batch just came on. Usually it even come on right as we were coming through. So you see now the icon there for the batch has been updated. My guess is the notification ones is because we're remote desktop. Like, there might be something there where the notification might be on the
It might be sitting there. We just can't see it, yeah.
We're just not seeing it. But that gives you an idea. This is, you know, it takes 2 minutes for you to download it and try it, and it's free.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the way to do plugins if you don't have some very specific... custom thing that you want to do.
And if you want to, like we were talking about earlier, doing the high score tables and stuff like that, getting some access to Azure, they have a really good plugin for Azure for the Windows Store, and I think they're in the process of bringing one over to the phone.
Yep. Yeah, they have one. It's just with 4.5.3, we had a breaking change that needs to be fixed on Unity, and as soon as that happens, they'll have the Prime31 Azure plugin. Now, there's an alternative that, you know, so I just show you the, hey, here's how I do plugins, or what I think is the more complicated but potentially sustainable way. There's an alternative to native integration that it's interesting that we can use, which is if you saw, like, all we were doing there is we have to create a little plugin, and then we pretty much can go link against code, and we have to swap code as we come in. There's an alternative approach that we talk about in the porting white paper that we wrote, where I call bridge or gateways. And the idea there is pretty simple, is if I'm in Unity, I can code against an interface. And then because all of this stuff integrates back and forth seamlessly as we link everything together in Visual Studio, I can actually make sure that I set the implementation of that interface on my code for later, right? So I can go back and say, look, on Unity, I'm going to code an interface called I do work or whatever. Like for example, I screen capture. Mm-hmm. And then I'm just coding against that interface, and then I have a method says set implementation, and then from my SAML C# code or from my C# code on Windows or phone, I can just say, oh, here's the implementation for that interface, and then I don't even have to write plugins at all. No. I'm literally just putting an interface on the Unity side, and then I'm putting a bridge or a gateway, as I call them, and then I'm putting the implementation on the Windows side or the phone side, and everything gets connected when the linker just magically says, oh, here's your implementation of these.
Oh, very cool. That's good for like lightweight stuff then, right? If you don't have anything that's too in-depth or maybe calling third-party APIs from inside the plugin, that might be a good way of going.
Yep. Yeah, and it's also good, and the reason I brought it up or I'm mentioning, I won't walk you through a full demo because I know we're running short on time, is that the one time when that's really interesting is right now Unity, they can compile for Windows Phone 8, right? But they don't compile for Windows Phone 8.1. So if you try to use an API that that's Windows Phone 8.1, you need to make sure that you have a pure abstraction where you're actually including something that they know how to compile. Because remember, Unity will post-process my DLLs. So if I give it a plugin DLL that's referencing in Windows Phone 8.1, it's going to come back and say that API does not exist. So Unity, as part of their processing on phone, they check that you have all valid APIs that they know on Windows Phone 8. So you use this bridge interface to fully abstract yourself, and then you have the implementation totally separate from the interface, and then you can go ahead and target a different platform.
That's really cool.
If you go look at the porting white paper, there's a gateway there that we use. We use it for eventing.
I did the same thing as Sumo Blocks, too. I use that to do a lot.
Yep. So that's kind of where we're at. If you're getting third-party plugins, if you're not writing them yourself, this is where things get interesting for people, right? Some plugins like NGUI or 2D Toolkit or some just ship as code. So it's going to be pretty easy when you bring them onto our platform. If you run into that, .NET Core to Mono thing that we have, you're just going to get a few compiler errors, and it'll be easy enough for you to fix and get it over with. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people just get a binary. And when you buy a binary from somebody, that you don't have control over the source, the compiler cannot, you're no longer compiling, so now we don't know whether that's compatible or not. And I think you mentioned this earlier. So what you do there is go to scan.xamarin.com, upload your DLL. Actually, it's a kind of a Silverlight app that runs in the browser, and it's running client-side, so when you dump your DLL there, it's not going to upload it to Xamarin, and they're going to have access to your code. It's server-side, it's client-side, it's scanning, and then it tells you how compatible that plugin is. And if you have any invalid APIs, it's going to tell you. Mm-hmm. If you have invalid APIs, most likely when those APIs get called on phone or Windows, it's just going to crash. So that's how you tell if you have third-party plugins.
Yeah, like I was saying earlier, I run all of my plugins through it because it is an awesome tool, and at the end of the day, it's going to save me a lot of headaches I don't have to worry about later on down the road. If I've built my entire game around this certain plugin and suddenly I find out the plugin doesn't support the platforms, So
yep.
Definitely a good idea to run it through there first.
Yep. And then the last, so that's you check it there and that's it. And from a summary, I just left you all the directories and the preprocessors that that we expect to do for anybody to use as we go through it. So this is kind of your reference that you can use for you creating your own plugin and doing anything else. Now, take what you learned here with how to integrate at the lower level, match it against what we did on yesterday's MBA where we talk about tiles and sharing and all that stuff. And go look at, connect those two APIs and you have everything you need.
Yeah.
For people who want to do it themselves, if you're hardcore and you want to do it themselves, the last thing that I would share is go to dev.windows.com, click on the samples, and there Microsoft has a sample for every possible light up feature, whether it's toast notification or tiles or settings or screen capture or anything you could want to do. We have a sample there for, there's probably 300 samples that you download every time if you want to download the whole package. And just look for the one, copy and paste the code. Just make sure your threading is right. In some cases, you need to make sure you're calling things on the UI thread. Use those methods that we told you earlier on Unity where it's got the invoke app on UI thread or an invoke.
Well, a good example of that is if you're using the share For instance, that has to be invoked on the UI thread. It can't be ran on the Unity thread, right?
Yep. So that's it. And again, Prime 31 plugins, there's other plugins out there, so I don't want to say, you know, hey, use these ones over everybody else's, but I can tell you that ours are free, or actually the Prime 31s are free right now. And then over time, Microsoft and Unity should have a lot of that functionality more integrated on the platform so you can do
it. And if you write a really cool one, right? If you come up with something really neat that you think would be really beneficial to the community, let us know. We'll be more than glad to, you know, evangelize it and let everyone know about it and even give you some tips and tricks on how to improve it.
If you didn't read that, he just asked you for a free one. He's going to say, hey, if you write one, send it to me, and then I'll evangelize it. That's how I get all the free stuff.
Exactly.
No, actually, if you have one that we should know about, let us know. Go to services.windowsstore.com. We can always, you know, put some there if you have the right service. And then if you have one that you need that's broken, feel free to drop me an email. And again, I have people, there's people in my team who are constantly outreaching, doing reach to developers that were like, oh, this plugin is something that people are asking for. And we go out there and try to help them port. And the work is not that much. So we have a good success in trying to get those to come.
Yeah, we're here to help you. So we'll help find the solution that's best going to fit your needs.
Yep.
Very cool.
So
that kind of wraps up the plugins and then some of the native integration.
Yep.
So I think it's kind of a good time to take a break.
Yep.
So we'll take a 10-minute break. And then when we come back, let's talk some optimizations.
Yep.
Sound good?
Good.
All right. See you in 10.